Welcome to episode 2 of Dinernet. I'm co-host and co-creator Taylor Reinhardt. This week on the podcast, we have Helen Cothrell, the creator of Betafish Magazine, as our guest, and Evan Swingle, my lovely roommate from my lovely home, who coined the phrase Dinernet, as our guest host. We talk a lot about nerd culture, which is the focus of Betafish Magazine this week. Just a fair warning, there is a twinge of white privilege because we are talking about our white privileged past and how you can belong and not belong to nerd culture as a whole. The other issue is that due to a technical difficulty, I became convinced that we would not have this episode at all. Luckily, we do. Unluckily, I talk a lot about how I am going to cry. So if you like that kind of thing, it's here for you. Thank you so much for listening, and enjoy this week's Diner Night.
That is the beautiful sounds of the always lovely and memorable Montel Jordan with This Is How We Do It, parodied by Matt Albini.
Wonderful.
Diner Night.
Right. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. You're going to have to talk exclusively like that. Welcome to Diner Night. I am Taylor Reinhardt.
That's a chorus.
And we are here joined today with guest host and the creator of the name Diner Night, Evan Swingle. Evan, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Taylor. How you doing?
I'm doing well. We're definitely going to talk to you a lot about how Diner Night was created and what it means to you. You are, of course, the heart and soul of Diner Night.
That's one way to put it.
Absolutely. The heart and soul. We will also be joined tonight by Helen Cothrell, who is the creator of Betafish Magazine, a nerd blog that Evan and I write for.
Yep.
We've sort of barely started the podcast, so we're just bringing in our friends. That's how we're going to start.
Woo!
Possibly.
Friendship.
How we're going to end. Our beginning and our probable end.
Life is about friendship.
Yes. Well, Hannah will introduce what we have decided is going to be the first thing that we do at Diner Night, because last time there was a lot of dissent.
Oh, okay. So the Diner Night basically is stories. So one person will tell a story and then another person will tell a story off of that story. And there's a connecting thread always. And before Taylor had had us just make up stories, but decide stories beforehand. And now we're going to, at Diner Night, have a word suggestion, and then so that all of our stories have some sort of common theme.
Yeah, I've just come up with one right now.
Here we go.
We're ready. We're diving excited. In deep. Well, Hannah is wearing a sweater that I correctly identified as a Freddy Krueger-esque sweater. It's very nice. Oh,
we got some music in the diner.
Diner Night atmosphere. Mm. Is definitely coming. We may have some blaring pop, which may interfere with things. But anyway, Hannah is wearing a... he's putting a dollar in that jukebox.
Yeah, he is.
So there is going to be a dollar put in the jukebox.
Oh, there it is.
Is it?
This is
a choice.
This is the Diner Night mood.
This is peaceful.
This is very peaceful.
There's a chubby man on the commercials.
Well.
Wait, is this... What is this?
I don't know. I feel like when the chorus comes around, I'll know this song. It sounds very familiar.
Right. Okay, well, anyway, so Hannah's wearing a sweater that reminded me of a Freddy Krueger sweater, and so I decided right now that our theme, our connecting thread, will be horror movies.
Ooh, yes.
Horror movies. I feel like everyone's got a good story about a horror movie, so that's a solid place to start.
Yeah.
And so guess first, because you said absolutely. I feel like you got a story for us already, Evan.
Fairly good one, yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
So this past summer... I really got into horror movies. I was always too afraid to watch anything along those lines before. And so one night we were in my friend's house who believes their house to be haunted. It's an interesting thing. We're down in their basement and we watched Sinister for the first time.
Sinister.
Very terrifying movie. So we're in this basement, which my friend believes to be haunted. We're down there. We're watching the movie. He falls asleep and I'm with one of my other friends. And so we get to the scene where essentially it's pretty early in the movie. A person is in this car that is lit on fire, and then there's this ghostly looking thing standing there, and they play the worst. It's a brilliant soundtrack. It's beautiful music, but it's also terrifying music. And I panicked and screamed out loud at 2 o'clock in the morning. And so we get through this movie, and essentially what happened was I was in this person's basement, heard creaking upstairs all night, could not go to sleep. I've never been this tired in my entire life. And so around 7 o'clock in the morning, I made my way upstairs to see if it was sunlight, like the sun had come out. And as soon as I had saw that the sun was come out, that it had come out, I got dressed, drove away, and went straight to bed and slept that rest of that day and had horrible nightmares. The rest of the day. Yeah. Not a fan of scary movies anymore.
Really? Sinister took away horror movies for you?
I will still watch a horror movie, but that will... Oof, the one of the worst I've ever seen.
Yep.
One
just so you know, worst. We all think the house was settling. We are all of that opinion.
Yeah, yeah. I mean...
The house is always settling.
The house is always... The house needs to settle, man.
They say that in every horror movie, and then
that's
people
true.
End up gone. Gone.
Yeah, but they say that in every real life, and people end up fine. Yeah. So, yeah.
Some would say.
Some would. Some would indeed say.
He's dubious about that.
Yeah, I had kind of a similar experience. In eighth grade, we watched The Omen, 2006 version. And then it was terrifying. I was not looking most of it, but I still caught most of it. Like, I still caught all the worst parts.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, we watched Jackass 3 as some sort of... Jackass 2, I think it was 2. As some sort of, like...
Buffer?
Buffer?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's Jackass great. 2 terrified me as well. And so then all my friends went to sleep, and I did not. I stayed up the entire night. And then for 6 months afterwards, had PTSD... like nightmares. I had to listen to a tape before I went to sleep every night. I had to like listen to the CD that like was like confronting your fears just so I could sleep.
Wow.
Will not watch any scary movies ever. Like I can't even watch the trailers. It's bad. It's totally a trauma thing, and it's just not good.
Yeah,
that's
either
or whatever
either
you want to go with.
You,
I love horror movies. I don't really get afraid of them. I think like the one that scares me the most is Scream. Just because like that could happen. You know, there could be a killer anywhere. Like if it's a real life person and it's not some supernatural thing, I usually, you know, that's the stuff that scares me. Like when I was in middle school, I think that's when I first watched it. And, like, I would go into the bathroom when I would come home, and I'd be by myself. And, like, I would lock the door, and I'd, you know, go to the bathroom. And then, like, I wouldn't leave sometimes because I was afraid if I opened the door, killer's probably out there, like, in my house.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, like, and I would, yeah. But, like, my grandpa, when he was younger, he was like, oh, yeah, let's go see Dracula. Let's go see that or whatever when he was a kid. And then the one time I was like, well, we can watch The Mummy. And he got very pale in the face, and he's like, that could happen. they did that to people. They mummified people. Mummies are real. And so I always thought that was interesting. But, like, I don't know. I think my favorite thing about horror movies, like, I saw Insidious 2 just recently.
Ooh, need to see that.
It was good. I liked it a lot. But, like, I think it's – I forget what jazz musician said it, but he was like, it's the stuff you don't hear. You know, and, like, the first Insidious was really, really scary. Until you get to the end of it, you see, like, the demon or whatever
it's
very, face.
It's very cartoonish.
Yeah,
like,
and it completely ruins it.
Yeah.
But you're afraid of it when you don't know what it is. And I think that's a, I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess we all fear the unknown.
Well, let's talk about a movie that doesn't leave much to the unknown. It is a movie called Stay Alive. Any of you see Stay Alive?
Oh, is that the video game movie?
No. That is the video game movie.
Yeah, that was Stay Alive.
So taking a page from Silent Hill. Well, firstly, I will say that when I was little, when I was four, younger than four, when I was two or three, I was watching this Thomas the Tank Engine video, And in it, these two trains come together for a crash, and it's built up really well. I still remember their faces. Like, they're, one of them's like, I'm just going to go. Nothing bad will happen. The other one's like, uh-oh, I think something bad's going to happen. And then they crash. And I had a visceral reaction where I stood up and ran to the TV screaming, just like, no, nah! like movie style. And my dad had to pick me up and be like, it's not real. It's not real. But it was like such a, and so like, I've always had very strong reactions to film and that kind of, visual and audio stimulation. And so Stay Alive was one of my first horror movies. Stay Alive is an atrocious movie. I don't even know who's in it besides Frankie Muniz, but Frankie Muniz is in
Frankie.
It.
No.
Frankie.
Good old Frank.
His last hurrah, I think.
It might have been.
I really think it was.
He was aging. Like, he was definitely old enough that like, you knew it wasn't like, he wasn't playing a child's role. He was playing like a, hey, I just graduated college role. And you're like, but he still looks like a child.
I think they made him wear a visor throughout most of the movie.
I can imagine.
His receding hairline.
Oh, poor guy.
Poor Frankie Muniz. Well, anyway.
It'd be more Frank now.
Yeah, he's nowadays what scares me. Yeah, right.
Frank Muniz. It's.
Right, Frank Muniz, yes, significantly
Franklin,
more professional. I'm making a serious run.
Yeah.
What's much scarier now is definitely the end of Frankie's career. But at that time, the movie was very scary. It was like sort of like what if you played Silent Hill, but the characters, when you died in the video game, could come out of the video game and kill you. And it was just an abysmal movie, and I went there entirely to make out with my middle school girlfriend, and every single horror movie I've seen has been in pursuit of some sort of a sexual conquest. Just none of them have not been. And this particular one scared me so bad that like we spend the entire first half of the movie making out, and me just like staring edge like side of my eyes at the screen. And finally I just stopped. I was like, I can't, this is just too much. This is just too much for me. And I had to give up on making out with my eighth grade girlfriend because Stay Alive just, it got me. It cut me deep. Couldn't play video games for 3 months, in which I died because I was like, they'll come out and kill me.
That'd be a good twist if you looked at the movie and then you look back and you're making out with the monster from the movie.
Wow.
Cut your head off.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very good.
Scary thing. I'm going to go on to horror movie writing.
Right.
Eighth grade boy turns head, makes out with monster.
Yeah. The things that I imagine in my mind that I haven't, because I haven't seen many scary movies, I just imagine horror sequences in my mind because I have a dark demon inside. And I think like I could definitely like just write horror movies from what I think of. They're very true to life. Lots of my mom dying or having to kill me and sacrifice.
Right.
Siblings.
So it's more like, is it more gruesome stuff or is it, okay, so it's psychological.
Psychological, right, thrillers, right, combined with just axe murdering my,
yeah,
family.
I think there are a lot of horror movies that do that.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the genre either, but I assume. The early Saw movies were supposed to be not like the later Saw movies.
Yeah,
so
the first,
they were supposed
I
to be serious.
The first Saw movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know, the most gruesome thing I think I ever heard was my friend said, imagine you put a toothpick between your toenail, like underneath your toenail, and then you kick a wall. And that gets me every single time. I just like,
I think what's funny is that the toothpick would probably snap. Oh, like, yeah. It wouldn't, like, it
if
probably wouldn't
if
happen.
If you kicked a wall,
if you
like,
got
it
square
in there far enough, and you kick,
you get it under there far enough, and you,
no matter what, because, like, I mean, there have been moments where I'll bite my finger, and, like, the one time I was having a pillow fight with my friends on a trampoline, it was, that sounds like a bad plot for an adult entertainment film. A bunch of young boys.
Sounds
on
like a good plot.
Yeah.
Sounds very usable, yeah.
He hit my hand with a pillow, and then my tooth wedged between my thumbnail and my thumb. And it just
nope.
Didn't even go that far, but it bruised it.
Right.
And, like, I was bleeding for a bit.
Right.
Yeah, that was awful. So like any like minimal contact with your fingernail.
It is.
Oh yeah.
It's nail. That those nerves under there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the worst pains I've ever felt in my life is the day I shut my thumb in a truck door.
Not even a car.
Real hard,
bam.
Right
Ford
in that,
tough.
Right yeah. In that, right in that 4x4. I drove that truck for a couple of years after this happened and never really had
with
a
psychological. Your thumb still in the door?
Yeah. Actually, I was connected. But no, one of the worst pains I've ever felt in my life. My thumb throbbed for weeks. It was black for a while. Just, oof, yeah.
Yeah.
It makes me cringe thinking about it.
Most gruesome thing that's ever happened to me, and I told Hannah this dream, and I had trouble recounting it. And I think I still have a trouble verbalizing it. But I had this dream where we were all having a party. And it was on like a sort of a bigger version of the staircase outside of Hannah's house, which is just a staircase straight up to a door. So it's like a small deck. But a guy's he's just jumping up and down and doing kickflips on a skateboard. And we're like, this dude's going to fucking kill himself. Why is he doing this at the party? Okay, we get it. And he does one and he falls and he hits and he jams his neck and he's laying there just looking sort of motionless. And I'm like, hey guy, get up, you know, it's come on. And I push him on his back and on his neck, and everything in him just snaps and his head falls to the side. Everything breaks in my hand, like I'm crushing up like chips, and just like his neck is snapped and his spine is twisted. And his entire head just made the loudest crack, and I woke up on that crack. And it is by far the grossest thing that's ever happened to me, which is nice that it's in a dream, but
yeah.
Also horrifying.
Yeah, when you think of the word, when I personally think of the word gruesome, that's that's always going to stick in my mind. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Just people cracking. That's,
I don't know, stuff that makes me like cringe. The scene in American History X. When you hear his teeth
curb
on
stomp.
The curb.
The
not
curb
even the curb
stomp.
Stomp, but just hearing his
no.
teeth.
No.
Ooh. But that's right. Not the most gruesome thing that's happened to me. I didn't get curb stomp.
Well, let's pick up the podcast and let's talk a little bit with Evan about how he views Diner Night. So for Diner Night historians, we all were in Diner Night. Happened when we all were coming to the diner. It was Matt O'Baney, Joe Skirm, me, Evan, and a guy named Jesse Bethay. And we all left and we had a great time. And Evan claimed we're going to come back every week. We're going to call it Diner Night. So what prompted you to do that, Evan?
I've always absolutely believed that one of the few things that keeps us sane and just kind of like grounded in this world is having a close-knit group of friends. And I believe that one of the closest things that can bring friends together is to be put in situations where they go from like hanging out in situations where like they like kind of not forced to hang out, but like have to hang out. You know what I mean? Like everybody's in the same place, so let's hang out, to a situation where we say, let's go hang out. And so one of my favorite things is always to say to someone like, hey, let's go do this. Like, we don't have to do this. Let's just go do this. It's purely a desire sort of thing. And so I have always believed that those are the situations that bring people together, where you go someplace and just, you don't have to be there, but everybody wants to be there. And so I always strive to bring the people that I love together in situations where everybody just is happy and friendly, and it's just perfect. That in my mind is picture perfect friendship, like everybody just together.
Right. So why the diner and why Diner Night is more the question.
I love the diner.
That would be great. Thank you very much. We have coffee refills coming. And actually, are we ready to order? Are you guys ready to order?
I'm ready.
Or should we take another second?
Can I look at the menu you guys order?
Okay. Evan, you going to order first?
I will absolutely order first. One of my favorite things about the diner is the carafe of coffee.
The carafe, yes. The carafe, yeah.
Recently.
We learned the word carafe, and we're all very happy about it.
Yes, I will have the two pancakes and two eggs with a side of bacon, please. And could I get my eggs scrambled?
Anything in your pancakes?
No, let's take regular, good old-fashioned pancakes.
Cool. I will get the cheeseburger and fries. Could I get onion on the burger? That'd be perfect. And then Matthew, you're up.
Ooh.
Helen, you want to get anything from our guest Helen Cothwell has just arrived. Do you want to get anything from the diner to eat? Okay, cool.
Enjoy the pyramid of cream that I stacked up there for you.
How would you rate the Frisco Mel?
Very popular.
Very popular. All right. I'm between that and the banana stuffed French toast. What do you think?
Banana French toast as the bread of the Frisco Mel. All
right. No. Absurd. He'll die. He'll much. Die.
Oh, jeez. You know what? I'm just going to do the banana stuffed French toast.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Very good choice.
Go ahead.
And could I also get a thing of bacon? Just a thing.
Loving on the bacon tonight.
We were
yeah.
We were talking about bacon.
Yep.
Can I get broccoli? Thanks.
All right. I think that's good. Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you.
All right. So Evan, why the diner and why diner night?
The diner night. I love the diner. It's great. It's one of the first places I came when I came to OU as a freshman. And then it
who'd you come
happened.
With?
My girlfriend at the time and a group of people. I later started to come a lot more often with Joe Skirm and Taylor. It was just it's a great place to just kind of sit. It's a little away from everything. It's quiet most of the time. The food is far superior to any other diner here in Athens. And
agreed.
At least in my opinion.
Agreed.
You can't go wrong with diner breakfast. I'm a big fan of breakfast.
The Walt Jr. of our group,
the Walt Jr.
some may say.
Of the diner club, diner night gang.
I mean breakfast. Tip top.
Yes.
Of this charge.
Yes. Yeah, can't go wrong with a good diner breakfast. And so that's pretty much why I like the diner. It's kind of love being here. It's a wondrous place. Wondrous place.
Yeah. The diner definitely houses many of my favorite memories.
Oh, absolutely. Would you like to talk about the table?
We've already talked about the table.
Oh, okay.
It's yeah.
Didn't realize
let's
that.
We gotta
stray
let it go.
Away from
it's,
the
yeah.
table story. Yeah.
Yeah. I was the one who yelled at you, stop naming it. I thought that you were going to take the magic away by naming it.
You were very
coming.
Persistent about it not becoming Diner Night. And I actually remember the third Diner Night. You were the first to call it Diner Night.
I know.
We were at the show, the improv show, and Taylor was like, "All right, Diner Night, let's go. Let's go to the diner." And everybody was just like, "Oh, yeah." And then you were very upset with yourself for a while.
Absolutely. I was. It's but then we made a podcast with it. So, yeah. That's that.
Never argue with a good thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, so our guest, Helen Cothrell, is here. So Helen and Evan are going to share a microphone because we aren't made of money here at Diner Night. We have to pay for the diner.
The entire diner.
So we bought diner. The diner. Yeah.
No,
but yes, Helen, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. So what we do is we bring in people from who are doing things around here at OU. We talk about what they're doing. We tell stories. So that's pretty much what we do. Firstly, do you have any experiences with Union Street Diner you'd like to share?
Most of my fondest memories at Union Street Diner are in the 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock a.m. hour.
Yeah.
When you're, mid all nighter at Alden Library and you're just like, I need something other than Red Bull or I think I might actually die.
Honestly, it's like a delirium when you come in here.
Oh,
then,
yeah.
Too. It's just like a pipe dream. I've had so many times. I barely remember that. I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah. And there's always that one guy who's on like his eighth cup of coffee and you think he's actually going to vibrate like out of this plane of existence. And it's just, it's a nice place to be, and they don't really care who you are, and that's nice, because it's like, I can come in here and work on physics, or you can come in here and, like, write a rap song, I don't know. But they, they're just happy to have you here, so.
Totally, yeah. You can come in here and set up a bunch of microphones and just start recording a podcast.
Yeah, and they're just like, what can we get you to eat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like the thought of, they don't care who you are, as if it was like,
"Oh, you're a Spanish major? Get out. The diner doesn't want you."
That's how Cafe Bibliothèque works.
I remember one night I was here studying for an organic chemistry exam. I had been at the library in the cafe all night. And so a friend of mine and I came here, and we sat in this exact booth, actually, and watched the TV, and we were studying for chemistry, and I was eating a pancake, very delirious, just completely out of my mind with exhaustion. And I looked up and saw the TV was on CNN, and I just see the headline, "Pope Resigns." And I'm just looking at a pictures of the Pope, and I panic and just go, "I've stayed up all night, and the Pope has resigned. I can never do this again." And of course, in my delirium, I was convinced it was my fault that the Pope had resigned. And so I went home, I went to sleep, and I had dreams of me being the Pope and resigning. And
So you were the current Pope that resigned? Or yes, they're like, Pope resigned, Evan, and you did it. You have to be the new Pope now.
I was the Pope who was resigning.
Okay.
And I woke up that morning and took that exam, and that the rest of that day I was just in this state where I was convinced that everything bad that could happen had happened because I had stayed up all night.
Wow.
It was a mixed up world.
Yeah. Original diner sin. Definitely. It's very sad. Very sad indeed. Well, we can talk to Helen about what she does.
Yeah.
So yeah, Betafish. Among other things, we can talk about everything that you do, okay. But Betafish was what we thought of first.
Okay.
So Betafish, why'd you found it? What is it?
So Betafish is a magazine that I co-founded with actually one of my roommates. She was my roommate in the residence halls last year, and she's still my roommate now, actually. But she kind of came to me in the winter of last year, and she was kind of kicking around an idea of starting a magazine, and she said that she wanted it to be something really, really nerdy. And she's a journalism and anthropology double major, so she has the kind of magazine side journalism know-how, but she kind of needed someone with a little more nerdiness to kind of round out the team. And she, you know, sharing a room with me in the residence halls, she could see how painfully nerdy I am, and was like, "Oh, Helen would be perfect." And so we kind of started talking about what we wanted to do with it, what kind of direction we wanted to take it in. And we went on WordPress and made a magazine and started talking to people about it. And so now, you know, we have people who blog for us. We have people who write more news type things, especially focused on things that are happening in Athens that nerds would be interested in. And we have a creative section also where we're taking creative submissions. And it's been, you know, I've been really surprised with how much positive feedback that we've gotten. And people seem to be genuinely grateful that there's an outlet like this available to them. So it's been very rewarding in many ways.
I went to the first meeting. It was wonderful. I don't write for it anymore.
I'm glad that you had a good experience.
Yeah, no, it was great. From the beginning, everybody was just like happy that there was something, there was a place for them to write down the arguments that they've just been having with their friends. There was finally a place for them to say, like, "I love Legend of Korra," mm-hmm. or just get it out. That's what Taylor and Evan write about Legend of Korra, are right now writing about it, so that's why I said that.
We're currently in the process of finishing our article for episode three.
Taylor will not answer my questions all right. About Legend of Korra.
You know,
he's been avoiding me. I don't know why.
I got a lot of chats on Facebook I have to attend to. You're not the only chat that I can...
I think it would be important to you, but I mean, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
Okay.
All right.
You know who we were having diner night with. Jeez, Taylor.
Do you write anything...
Yeah, I've written a little bit. I actually wrote a small series of blogs where I relayed a Dungeons & Dragons campaign through the perspective of my character.
That's wonderful.
Which was really interesting. I couldn't keep up with it because it was, we were doing, you know, so much campaigning every week, and it was just too much to fit into one blog. So I've done that. I've written a little bit about science things, like, for example, how, at a certain point in their lifetimes, stars can basically become giant space diamonds.
Time how, and in the sky.
How quantum physics is important to things like why your favorite t-shirt glows in the dark and also how your microwave works. So, I mean, as a physicist, I try to look for things that people might be interested in that is physics and relay it to them in a way that's going to be accessible and not terrifying. So basically, how can you make physics cool and take out all of the math? And that's when people might start to think that it's actually not awful. So I've done a little bit of that, and then a little bit of creative work, but mostly I contributed mostly when we were founding Betafish because we wanted to build up a foundation of content. So that's when I was doing most of my blogging, but most of what I do now is more administrative things, like kind of managing like a team of bloggers.
Yeah.
And occasionally contributing, but
yeah.
Right. Well, I really liked your one article, a guide to help my silly friend Brian understand Skyrim.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was for Brian Vatican, I presume.
Yes.
Yes, one of the most involved and least nerdy people I can think of. So that was a great one. I would love to see that series continue as well. Things to help Brian understand. It was very funny.
Well, Brian has great potential to be a nerd, but he had actually been asking me for a while why I was so obsessed with Skyrim. And so I finally decided just to put it all, you know, into words in one place and say, Brian, this is why Skyrim is amazing.
Right.
And I think he understands at least a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, whenever I write for Betafish, that's always like, because the biggest thing about nerd culture that people don't understand is why you care so much, like why you're so wrapped up into it, why fandom is so much. And then they tweet 1,000 tweets about the Browns. It's very confusing to me. Like, people like stuff.
Right.
And that's why. But yeah, I definitely really like that look on the whole thing.
I completely understand where you're coming from. Because at an early age, I grew up with Marvel. Based, I don't even know what to call
everything.
It. Yeah, everything Marvel based. My dad is very into the Marvel scene, and so from an early age, he kind of taught me to be into this, and I've loved it ever since. Especially the Iron Man comics. Taylor and I often argue, somewhat passively, aggressively on my part more than his, about.
I'm passive aggressive.
He's very. I'm a little worse. About Iron Man versus Batman. I write for Betafish, Marvel for Iron Man. I wrote a article on Iron Man 3, and Taylor has written quite a bit about Batman. So we have our little quabbles, our little quarrels about rich playboy superheroes. It's kind of a weird thing to argue about. When you
I like mine less goateed.
That's fair.
And less robotic.
I like mine less. I like mine less more, I guess, is a thing I could say. Tony Stark is better. but we don't need to get into this now.
No. We don't need to get into this. But that's the fun part about Betafish as well, because that's like a lot of what we get into, I think. And when I like when I post my stuff, like Man of Steel was an awful movie, there's always somebody to be like, I think most of us agree on that, but there's always somebody to be like, it was good and I liked it, which is very fun. Matt, what are your nerdy tendencies? I know you have a few.
Well, I have a lot. I mean, last episode we brought up CB radios. Like, I'm fascinated. I own a lot of walkie-talkies. I even brought some on campus with me because sometimes you can pick up people talking on them, and I like to just chit-chat with people. But the other people that are doing that, like, they – I don't know. I guess I want to know how you feel about just the nerd culture in general, because for a while, growing up, I was awful at sports, and I was so secluded from everybody because, like, I was never really good at them. I ran cross country, but, like, for the most part, my brothers, there was a comic book shop near us, and me and my brother, we would all go to this comic book shop, and we played, like, a lot of just the small independent games that people were coming out with, like, I mean, like, it's things along the line of, like, Warhammer and stuff like that. And so I don't read many comics, but I love playing the games. Like, Lunch Money is one of my favorite card games, which is just
a couple of guys just came up with it.
Have you ever heard of Lunch Money, Helen?
I have not heard of Lunch Money.
Give us a little bit.
It's a card game. The cards are like designed very well. It's a picture on each one, and basically what it is you have a circle of people, and you can lay down a card like punch, and so the person next to you gets punched. But they have cards sometimes in their hand, not like physically punched, but like in the game.
Oh, okay.
And so you like lay down these cards, and there's just different mechanics to it. Like you can lay down roundhouse, and so you would do a roundhouse kick, but that person next to you could lay down a card that says dodge. So they dodge it, but the roundhouse kick goes to the person next to them, and stuff like that. Like it's, and there are a couple games that I've played like that. And so,
sounds a lot like Uno, only very like instead of drawing two cards.
Yeah, it's
Kung Fu.
It's pretty easy to pick up and play. And so, like, there was just like a small community at my comic book shop, All American Cards and Comics, and like it would just, you could meet up and you would sit there and play with people, and they always had games that you could test out and play, and I loved that. I put hours into that. High school, my one friend wrote campaigns for Dungeons and Dragons. We also played the TV show Firefly. They did a role-playing game as well, along the lines of Dungeons and Dragons, where you built a crew up and everything like that. And so we tried to intertwine both of our campaigns. It ended horribly, but it was fun. Like we did, I think, like multiple all-nighters for that one. It was bad.
So that's a question that I'd like to pose to all of you. How many of your nerd campaigns have ended horribly? Like, that's a very funny thing to me.
Well, almost all of them. Like, I know my character usually dies because I still, like, I've played for a while, but, like, I'm still, a lot of things I tried never end well. my character usually dies just because I don't think everything through, I guess. But most of my campaigns, everyone else does well. I usually just die, though.
Helen?
I think the answer to that would depend on whether or not you liked the ending to Mass Effect 3. I feel pretty confident in a lot of my nerdy endeavors. Really, if something doesn't end well, it's just because I've started doing something else and got terribly excited about that instead. I actually have only been playing Dungeons & Dragons for a little less than a year, so I haven't had time for my character to get ruthlessly slaughtered at the hands of a demon yet. looking forward to it, but right now I'm just having a lot of fun with it because I'm playing a druid, so I can like turn into a velociraptor and shoot lightning, which is
good
really
choice.
Cool.
Absolutely. Good choice.
So I'm still... Really, my biggest failure is not utilizing that because I'm like, you know, this could be a great time to turn into a bat and, you know, fly around here, or I can just do something lame like shoot fireballs. And I never think of doing the cooler option. And then it's, you know, the round is over and
yeah.
And it's too late.
All right, we have food here. Food is arriving.
Thank you.
The florets of broccoli.
It's very green broccoli. This be considered to be a mini carafe of syrup?
No.
It's along the same
wouldn't.
Lines.
It's a pitcher.
Somewhat of a carafe et, maybe? Thank you.
No. Yeah, you're...
I'm reaching?
You're reaching.
I'm reaching.
You can't...
Apologies.
Everything can't be a
my
carafe.
My apologies for the reaching.
That would be great. Thank you so much. Okay,
thank you.
So the whole, like, nerd culture thing is kind of strange for me. And, like, preamble, this might get... I don't know. Like, I feel weird complaining that I wasn't allowed to be a nerd. But I wasn't. My parents never bought us video games. My siblings got Game Boy Colors when my dad was trying to win them over when my parents were getting divorced. But they were only allowed to have them at my dad's house. So the first video game that I played was the Wii, like Wii Tennis. And the first actual game I played was Skyward Sword, which was great. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, this should have been my life. But instead, I was just sad. Like, Harry Potter was definitely would have been the introduction for me. And I was. Harry Potter was everything. I I thought that Harry Potter was real. He was my only friend. It was indicative of a future. And then I guess, like, I was just too... I didn't have anybody else. I didn't have many friends. And so I never had anyone to, like, do that with me. So I was constantly bouncing around. Like, I had different friends every year. And so I was constantly bouncing around my interests. So I never was able to, like, invest in anything like that. And also my parents never would have let me. So, like, it's a weird thing because people... Well, actually, no one's ever said this because I've never said it out loud. But I'm always afraid that people will say, like, oh, too bad you weren't, like, ridiculed in your school and everything. Because people do make fun of nerds for being nerds. But also, like, I never... got to have it, you know what I mean? I never got to have that sense of camaraderie.
Yeah,
now being nerd's a cool thing, though. You know, I mean, like I cut my teeth with being a nerd.
Yeah,
like I did not have many friends during my childhood as well, but like not like I would always play Nintendo 64. Ooh. Beautiful. there were a lot of games that I played that like I could not talk to anybody about except
yeah.
my brothers.
Yeah.
And like, but now it's like, oh yeah, Super Smash Bros. On the N64. I totally did that. And it's like, I don't know. I think there are a lot of people that now are embracing the culture, which is cool. But then there's definitely a backlash from the nerds that are like, you don't know what it means.
Well, that's, I mean, that's the really interesting part, though, because like, what you're talking about is like, being included versus being excluded, and like nerd culture has such a complex relationship with inclusion and exclusion, because obviously it's been well documented nerd culture's problem with female nerds and you know, understanding what that means. The nerd is constantly searching for, oh, no girl understands me, when you know the reality is nobody wants to be your mother. Thank you very much. So we've been handed a card from Nicola that says authorities report, quote, syrup pourers. She claims that pourers is the correct scientific term for the syrup. I will buy it.
I'm a scientist and I can confirm this.
yeah. Scientist.
So yeah, that's why I feel weird like talking about it, because it is. I mean, just everybody has a different experience growing up. But now all of my friends are nerds. And I still don't have, like, that.
Nerds
be,
in
like,
vogue,
yes,
man.
Yes, I agree.
Nerd culture is... Anybody who's making fun of nerds is totally outside of the zeitgeist right now.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, I guess one of my questions to you, Taylor, is... you've told stories about your high school years and everything. You played football in high school.
I did.
And now I'd consider you to be one of my closer friends. My question to you is... I'm a nerdy person. Most of our friends, just about everybody at this table is a nerd. But is this culture new to you as far as, like, you came into this? You chose to come into this. This wasn't a thing you were forced into. So I guess my question is, being from a football player, from a high school football player's perspective, voted best eyes at your high school?
Yeah, best eyes were in the Kill One class of 2010. Yes, you're correct.
So how do you feel about kind of choosing to come into this culture?
Well, I'm also going to direct this question to Helen, because I'm interested to see how she saw this play out with her brother, Max, who also was a cool guy in high school, I would assume. Well, she's making a skeptical face. But first, I'll give my answer. My answer is that it was very easy for me because I liked Batman and I wore Batman shirts all the time. And that was like, so I didn't want to be your typical jock. I was like, I've got this identity as well, you know, and it's me. I'm like, I do. I like Batman and I talk about, I read comics, whatever, you know, like it was like this thing that set me apart. It was like, it was actually, honestly, it was like a hyper masculinity kind of deal, because it's like, not only am I a super cool football player guy, but also I have sensitivity, and you can tell this because I also am cool to the nerds. It was totally like this Disney Channel bullshit. So like, honestly, part of becoming acquainted with nerd culture and all of its seriousness was just stripping away the pretense of what it means to be a nerd and just being like, okay, what do I like? And following that. I'm still far from the nerd that is to be respected. I still dabble.
Taylor has recently been teaching me football.
I have been teaching Evan football.
And, watching a lot of football lately. Going to B-dubs on Sundays for hours. 3 hours, maybe more.
Yeah, a football game is 3 hours. Evan didn't know this. Evan was not aware.
I'm so inexperienced. But it's just, it's a different thing. I like it a lot. But coming from a nerd watching football for 3 hours at a sports bar while everyone's yelling and eating wings is certainly far more masculine than I am.
It's all a front. It's all total front. There's nothing masculine about it. It's very, very silly. A guy taking a beer and screaming about the Cowboys into the restroom is not. There is nothing
that is
cool.
The thing that happened to us last B-Dubs
yeah.
day.
Yeah, I played with that guy in football, and it may not have been actually that guy, but I played with his spirit. Absolutely, it's very silly. But Helen, yeah. So was Max cool in high school, or
does Max know about this podcast?
Max,
first of all,
no, he doesn't. We haven't released an episode yet. He may hear it though.
Okay.
Oh, Max Cawthrell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah, we have the same last name.
We'll edit it out.
That's my brother. Max was pretty much a huge nerd through high school graduation, I would say. I mean, everything that I know about video games, I pretty much learned from him. And that includes things that he taught me inadvertently. For example, I don't know if you've ever played any of the Elder Scrolls games.
I know, except for Skyrim.
Okay, well, Oblivion, he had Oblivion when we were in high school. And I actually did a full clear of Oblivion by myself, just from sneaking into his room while he wasn't there and playing his Xbox. So he was a great resource for me entering nerddom, but I would have a hard time saying that he was a cool guy in high school because we both did marching band, we were both on the soccer team, and coming from a small farming village in central Ohio, those were not cool things to do. We got made fun of a lot for both of those things. We all did. If you weren't on the football team, then you just weren't cool. So neither of us were cool, but it does, come down to your definition of cool also, because I still think that my brother is one of the coolest people that I've ever known. But it's not really cool in, like, the, varsity jacket kind of way that a lot of high schoolers would think of cool as. So, yeah. He probably seems cool now because he's rather aloof.
It is the aloof.
It is. It
yeah,
totally
it's,
is.
I think it's the aloofness that a lot of people, when I mention my brother, or if they're like, oh wait, you're that Max's sister, and I'm like, yes, and they're like, oh, he's so cool, and I'm like, have you ever actually talked to him? And they're like, no, I just see him on the fringes sometimes, and he just seems so cool, and I'm like, okay.
We're figuring you out, Max.
Yeah, I mean, he's honestly at this point, I would call him a closeted nerd. he's not as open about his nerdy identity as he used to be. But a lot of I think his nerdy spirit was crushed out of him by 4 years in university.
It's sad.
Which is no small trial. So
yeah.
It's interesting that you bring up the varsity jacket, or at least I heard the word. I was
varsity jacket.
Yes. I was smothering my pancakes in syrup.
From the poorer.
Yes.
The poorer.
Nikola
Tesla is what just came into my mind. Sorry.
Brilliant.
Sorry. Keep going. Edit.
Edit point.
When I was in high school, pretty much everyone was allowed to have a varsity jacket. It wasn't a varsity football thing. I got my first varsity letter in marching band my freshman year. Actually, I know I had a varsity letter before I was even in high school. I got it my eighth grade year. Because I played first trumpet all year, and as an eighth grader, that was significant. I come from a very small town as well. So throughout the years, I had made my way to section leader of trumpet, and then I had ended up becoming the drum major of my band.
Is this all your story
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, I was the drum major of our band for 2 years,
incredible.
Actually.
did you go to the academy?
The Dramaturgy Academy?
No, I didn't. I went to one camp. That was it.
I was not the actual field conductor of the band. I was in charge of teaching and essentially just leading. I still played trumpet on the field. But one of the things that we're talking about as far as coming from a small town, it was interesting that being a significant leader of the band actually upped some whatever social status. It's all a front anyway. But the social status like that I had was increased, and for whatever reason, because during football games, one of my responsibilities was to essentially pump up the crowd, and so I would run back and forth in front of the stands in the student section like a complete and total jackass. Can I say jackass?
You can. Yeah, you can okay. say jackass. This podcast is explicit on iTunes, but we can't say jackass.
Jackass to the point where during homecoming, my friend, the field commander, and I did a bit where I was charged with coming up with some way of bringing the band out onto the field, introducing the halftime show for the homecoming game, and I decided what I wanted to do was have a lightsaber duel in the middle of the football field with my friend. I came out onto the field, I pumped up the crowd, and then he pulled a lightsaber out from his was red, of course. He pulled a lightsaber out.
Sith bastards.
This was not rehearsed. He pulls a lightsaber out of his jacket and comes up behind me. And people are screaming in the stadium, look out behind you. Look out. Like they were into this bit. And so I pulled a lightsaber out of my jacket and we start dueling in the middle of a football field. And people are freaking out, just loving it. And so we have this big fight. I ended up winning. And then like I did the whole like Rocky, oh, I just won the, like, I don't even know. I've never seen any of the Rocky movies.
We can only assume he celebrates.
But then I pulled out my trumpet and started playing a solo in the song Seven Nation Army right after that. One of my favorite experiences in marching band ever. But yeah, it was interesting that after things like that, whatever social status I had in the school was upped. I started making a lot of new friends, and it was just, I mean, it is what it is, but I'd agree that coming from a small town like that, you know, we're looked upon as, I really verged off the topic there for a while, coming from a small town like that, where our high school is in the middle of a cornfield, we were definitely looked down upon for not being, like, whatever they wanted us to be. It was weird.
It's such a vague definition, because isn't what they want us to be fighting with lightsabers in front of a crowded stadium of screaming people?
That's what I always wanted my life to be.
I think that's what a lot of people want their lives to be. It's such a funny thing.
Yeah, and so, like, when coming from this small school, the principal called me into his office shortly after that, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble. Like, I had a lightsaber duel and, like, faked killed a person in the middle of this football field, and he congratulated me and asked me, how do we get people more into marching band? And I was like, I'm a senior in high school getting ready to go to my physics class. I don't know what you're talking about.
Lightsabers? Irony? Attacks?
Let's just all do a lot of lights. Change football and just instead of football, have them all hit each other with plastic toys. You can buy it $20 from Walmart. Everybody will be happier. Everybody.
Absolutely.
It was a failure.
Did not catch up.
It's so weird thinking about what is cool in different high schools because the band, like marching band at my school, they just weren't part of the social group. They were just a part. They were just their own entity. And people would talk about their sexual endeavors because, man, the marching band at my school got in it.
That's frightening.
They got in each other. Incest abound. So people would be like, oh, did you hear? Because marching band was first period, so that they would all stand around like the band room. And then you would hear it walk. You would hear when you walk past, and then you would like spread the rumor. It's like, oh, I heard this when I walked by the marching band. But anyways, they weren't, I wouldn't say they were cool, but they were just a different entity. But so my school was also in the middle of nowhere, but in the affluent part of the middle of nowhere. So like, we had football players, but they weren't necessarily the coolest people. The coolest people were the people with all of the money. which was very strange. People who could buy Lacoste, and that's the only brand I can think of.
Like Hollister.
Well, yeah, in middle school it was Hollister and Abercrombie, but then as high school progressed, it was designer stuff. Who was doing acid? Those were the coolest people in our school.
Was acid a financial thing?
Acid was a financial, because it costs money to do acid.
Well, yeah.
Did you hear Mickey has 15 acids, man?
Acid was used as currency in Lexington High School.
Well, alcohol more.
Right.
People started drinking alcohol so quick in my school.
That all just sounds like such a foreign experience to me.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was probably happening, though.
I'm sure, like, it was happening. Like, we weren't there, but it was happening. And I was just not exposed to that at all.
Yeah.
Like, this is probably embarrassing to admit, but 2 weeks ago, so I'm 20 years old. I'm in college. I've been in college for 2 years. 2 weeks ago, I was walking down Jeff Hill with some of my friends, and I said, "Oh my gosh, there has to have been a skunk here." I had seen one a couple of days prior, and I was like, "Someone freaked out that skunk or something," and they're like, "Helen, that is not what a skunk smells like. That's weed." And I was like, "Wait, no, it's not. No, wait, really?
In college,
that's what weed smells like?" And they were like, "Where have you been for 2 years?" And I was like, "I mean, my Xbox doesn't smell like this." That was kind of an embarrassing moment for me, but at the same time, it's just, I have had no exposure to that at all. So that is really frightening to hear that you had that in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
High school is rough.
Yeah. You guys, you both, the marching band story and that story have this theme of insulation. I think nerd culture definitely gives you that, like, while also being... isolated, you're also completely just oblivious to what goes on around you. And had I worn different clothes, I would know about a lot more things than because I wore my Batman t-shirts. Like, it's just a weird thing. You stay in this sort of blissful ignorance while learning about things that, like, frankly are much more productive in my mind. It's I don't know, that's another interesting, like, nerd culture has so many facets right now, and it's catching on. It's become like this hot thing with all these superhero movies and everything, but they're like so many, there are just so many, like, different branches of nerddom. It isn't this, like, collective thing. Like, people, at least now, like, the old nerds, the people you hear, the veterans of Comic-Con, the ones who were there when it started, like, they described it as, like, this big collective experience, and now it's so multifaceted.
It's almost interesting to say, when I was in high school, we had cliques, but they were never quite as divided. It was interesting coming from such a small school. We weren't as divided as you'd think we would be. But one of the things I started to notice was that people who were not considered nerds, when all the superhero movies started coming out, instead of being those people who were, like, reading the comic books from the beginning, like, mm-hmm. I did, and then, like, oh, we love the movies, we love the characters in the movies, and suddenly they started being discriminated against for being nerds, or what that definition of the nerds were from those movies. And it was almost offensive, to a sense, to, like, look at these people and say, hold on a second, I was that way before they were.
Right. I honestly believe I didn't like Dark Knight when it came out, just because everyone liked Dark
Knight.
Yeah, so... I was like, stay away from my shit, guys. Stay away from my shit.
When the Avengers came out, I was so happy. Like, I was like, oh, this is it. Like, this is what I've always wanted. And then it exploded, and suddenly it was just this big popularity extravaganza. And it was just insane, and... honestly, it's a brilliant movie. I love it. But at the same time, I'm like, listen, guys, like, you don't know. Like, you don't know. And it's like I said, it's almost offensive to be put in a category with people that are like, oh, I love this because Robert Downey Jr. plays Iron Man. And, like, don't get me wrong, I love Robert Downey Jr. He's a brilliant actor. He's a very attractive person.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
But, no, like, I grew up with Tony Stark. I did not grow up with Robert Downey Jr.
Same with me and Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
Very similar feelings.
So it's just an interesting experience to be put in a category with people who I wouldn't necessarily compare myself to in any way whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember I asked my friends to see the second Batman film, and
was 3 weeks before it came out, and so people were just like, I'm not really into Batman, no thank you, no thank you. But then, like, 2 days before, once there had been such a hype about it, they were like, oh, yeah, we'll go. And it was like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I have never seen a more attractive movie theater than The Dark Knight Rises' midnight premiere. Everyone was, like, super, super good looking. They were all dressed in very, very flattering Batman wear. It was just the funniest thing to see how that movie went and how what an event the premiere became. It was, I mean, mainstream America was in that theater. I was surrounded by them. I wasn't with nerds. Like, I did not see nerds there. And that's one of the really funny things about the superhero movies. Helen, do you get offended when non-nerds try to out-nerd you?
If it appears to me that they are actually trying to out-nerd me, it's a little offensive. I mean, I would be just as offended if someone came up to me and started telling me why they knew that gravity was wrong. It's just, you know, as someone who's been a nerd since I could form words, it's a little difficult to, you know, look at someone who was like, I know that you were giving people like me bruises in high school, and now, you know, all of a sudden it's like we're apparently on the same level. It's not really true. It's difficult because you definitely want to celebrate that people are acknowledging and appreciating the same things that you do. But at the same time, there is kind of that feeling like, you know, this is mine. Like, what, I was here first. And that kind of reconciling those two feelings can be really difficult as a nerd. But I think what it all comes down to is being able to kind of stay in your nerddom and just let people do their own thing. I mean, as far as the whole, The Dark Knight Rises, for me, was a pretty profound experience. I mean, I hyperventilated at the end of that movie. I have never hyperventilated at a movie before. But I was sitting in the theater, and, you know, the last scene ended, and I couldn't breathe normally for a solid 3 minutes. And my friends were like, Helen, are you going to be okay? And I was just kind of, like, nodding and like, yes, I think, maybe. Those are the kind of nerdy experiences that I think set you apart from someone who is just going to see the movie because it looks cool or because they think Christian Bale is a badass or, you know, X number of reasons that maybe you don't think are the right reason. But kind of allowing yourself to enjoy your own nerdy experience is very rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you look to the people to your left and right and think you don't really belong here.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you talk about personal nerddom when, like, in my mind, like, nerd culture has exploded because the communities have been allowed to form with the internet. Like, personal nerddom became a thing in the past. It was like, finally, we're connected. And Comic-Con was the same sort of principle. And, like, now, as it's permeated into the mainstream, it's like, well, remember when it was reclusive? Like, back up a little bit, you know? Let's take a step back here. And, I that's just so interesting to me. I really, really love it.
Yeah, watching the social dynamics of nerdiness change, even as we've grown up, has been really fascinating. And certainly the internet has been a big part of that because nerds aren't always, you know, social butterflies. That's not to say that we're socially impaired, because that's not true. That's a misconception. Nerds are not socially impaired. I'm not going to go off on that tangent right now, but I do want to say that. And the internet has been kind of a great tool for people to find each other by common interest and communicate in a way that is non-threatening and enjoyable, really.
Yeah. When I was young, in elementary school, when I was very young is when I became a nerd, I guess is a way of putting it. And when we were kids, we all got our Game Boy Color. My Game Boy Color was stolen when I was a kid, which is a different story.
Pokemon cards stolen from me.
Pokemon, yes. But when I was a kid, I was in elementary school, and my parents went to work early, so I would go to what we called Latchkey, which was just essentially a bunch of kids that, you know, their parents had to go to work very early, would sit in the cafeteria and like they would have games for us and they would just watch us. And one of the things I experienced was some of my closest friends in elementary school that kind of went through junior high with me, not so much high school. But we got together by sitting with our Game Boy Colors and Game Boy Advances and Game Boy SPs, and we never got to like 3DS culture. That was more middle school, but DS, not 3DS. But yeah, it was Pokemon first. We would sit, we'd play Pokemon, and then Mega Man was major. All the Mega Man games, we were very into those, and we were considered the kids who sat in Latchkey. People knew us in elementary school as the kids who sat in Latchkey and played Mega Man all day for multiple hours at a time, and just talked about it and sat in our own little corner playing Mega Man. And that was kind of what nerd culture was back then. It was just, these kids are the corner kids who just relate to each other and nobody else. And I think we keep talking about how like all these new, it's completely different than it was, and I absolutely agree, because we're no longer that group sitting in the corner by ourselves playing video games and murmuring to ourselves. Like, that's just not, and maybe it was never what we were, just like it was not as understood, but it's interesting to see that now. It's just like everybody's up front talking about it. Like, nobody's afraid to say, hey, I love Pokemon, it's a great thing, let's all buy the game and play it together. Like, it's just, it's strange for me, but also very rewarding to be a part of that, what it originally was. Yeah.
Something that's been really interesting for me, kind of coming of age in this very tumultuous time for nerd culture, has been seeing how people manage to objectify nerdy women, just like they'll objectify a non-nerdy woman.
Yes.
It's constantly baffling to see how people will attempt to make nerdy women live up to their kind of ideal of sexiness. That has been absolutely fascinating. And again, that's something that you know, happens a lot on the internet. You know, you see people talking about how, like, you know, who is the hottest nerdy woman that you know? And it's, you know, it's never someone who's really a nerd, because it's really hard for me to digest the idea that a nerd is going to get really excited about something like Foundation. For example, I learned what I don't even remember what it's called.
Like,
concealer?
To get rid of the bags?
Concealer? Yeah, something like to make you look more awake, which sounds silly to me, because if you're exhausted, like, people should know you're exhausted and not try to talk to you.
Yeah.
But I learned what that was for the first time today, actually.
It's terrifying.
And the person who I was talking to was baffled, and they were like, how do you not know this? And I said, why would I? But that's kind of pretty much beside the point. But it's really interesting to see, you know, it pops up everywhere, kind of from, like, you know, the sexy, nerdy Halloween costumes, like an R2-D2 mini dress or something like that. just to
I
like the...
Okay.
Yeah, but just, or like, you know, the popularity of someone like Felicia Day, who I honestly am not a fan of, because I think that she kind of sets this, you know, people see her as the, you know, ideal nerdy woman who can not only talk intelligently about Star Wars, but is also to them, you know, kind of, she fits very well into that, I think, sexy woman kind of niche, and her being able to do both of those things simultaneously is what gets people really excited about her. But that makes it difficult to be a very visible nerdy woman now, because part of being a nerd now is it's very visible. So it's a lot to take in at once, I think. And a lot of it comes back to also the changing role of women in our society. And there's a lot of really interesting crossovers there that I've started to notice. But yeah.
No, yeah.
I mean, it's the, oh God, I'm trying to think of what it's called, but it started with like, Knocked Up and Super Bad. Just like the lazy, like triumphing a lazy man. And like the opposite of that is a successful yet nerdy woman, a successful woman who can come home from her job and then talk about Star Wars.
Time out.
Evan just picked up my plate of fries and handed me his plate of pancakes. No, we had to bring this up. What do you? You don't take someone's food and put your food in front of them. I'm going to take your food, but listen, don't worry, you can have mine. I do. I'm gonna eat these pancakes. I don't even care.
I get bored with food. I like French fries. Therefore, ergo, you get mine. I get yours. Let's stop talking about.
Boy, that was an agreement that was pretty presumptuous.
If you want, I was thinking about going to McDonald's after this.
I do not want McDonald's. No, that's fine.
Right, I forgot that we.
Yeah, it's fine.
It was nice to offer.
Yeah, it was a very nice offer.
Thanks.
I'll go with you, but I don't need more fries. I'm very happy.
All right. I guess you did have.
It's just how presumptuous it was. That's
no.
All I care about. Anyway, continue what you were saying, Hannah. Continue what you were saying. I'm sorry.
Women are placed into many roles. They're supposed to know about Star Wars. They're also supposed to be attractive and not have bags under their eyes and have jobs that pay as much as men, which is impossible because they don't.
Yeah. Well, I think of Knocked Up especially, and like Katherine Heigl in that movie is auditioning for the part of a caretaker for Seth Rogen. And like, that's what I think nerds want most, is they literally do want the girlfriend mom. Like,
that's not, don't say like all nerds, obviously not all nerds,
right?
Nerds that aren't being sexist.
But I mean, like, there's a lot of, I just mean there's like a lot of that nerd culture, like the constant moan is, why don't I have a girlfriend? And
yeah,
and that's problematic in like 90% of cases. It's the lament, why don't I have a girlfriend, like that's going to fix everything, is it puts the, like you said, the onus on the woman to fix everything.
Yeah. Have you been personally persecuted by sexist nerd men or women?
I don't think that I've personally, I'm trying to think now. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Nothing, if I had been, I'm sure that it would have come to mind pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But you know, really it's just, you know, when people talk about something now, you see it because they talk about it on the internet.
Yeah. A lady in the tramp like French fry.
Evan, you can't be doing visual jokes on a podcast. Stop it.
You have to bring it up.
You can't put a fry in your mouth and put that fry in another person's mouth. No matter what,
translation, we can't have friendship here, Evan.
Okay. Continue with your thought, Alan. I'm sorry.
Right, the thought. No, so it's really just seeing people talk about it on, you know, on the internet.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing the kind of things get tossed around, like, why don't I have a girlfriend? Because Felicia Day exists, so I know there have to be other women like her. And it's, you know, completely.
Oh, the logic.
Yeah, it's
hard.
It's not even. It's non-existent.
Yeah.
It's just. It's absurd, and it's just seeing it all happen is infuriating from my perspective, mm-hmm. because part of being a nerdy woman is that you're offering more to kind of, you know, all of your friendships and all of the people that you communicate with. There's more than just, you know, having great hair or having the best genes. It's having a really, really, really good reason to hate that one, you know, issue of Batwoman, because it's just absurd, or, you know, something like that. Those are the kinds of things that people appreciate, between nerds. I've never had a nerd tell me that, like, my shoes look horrible with my jacket, or, what was I thinking, you know, wearing these glasses when it's fall or something like that. I don't know if any of those make any sense.
Different seasons for your glasses.
I don't know. That's like, that's how baffling, like, the whole fashion world is to me. That I think that could be a legitimate, you know, complaint for fashion. I have no idea.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is somewhere.
You know, somewhere somebody said that.
I think a true nerd shouldn't care about something like that.
You're right.
So again, you know, it almost comes back to, are these people, you know, real nerds? Do they belong here? I don't know.
Yeah.
I wish my former roommates were still sitting next to us as they were before, because they would have gotten up and been like, yeah, those glasses are terrible for fall. They would have absolutely been in our face about it.
Yeah. Well, what's weird about this whole debate is that I have this, and like this is just going to be a little bit of a side. Like, I have the same problem with like feminism as a whole, because there are people who will like tout their feminism that aren't living a life of feminism or a feminist life and don't treat others nicely. But still the underlying thing of both being a nerd and being a feminist is inclusion. Like, you want everybody to either have Batman or anything in their life, or to be equal in the world. And so it's very
hard. One is clearly more important than the other.
So it's hard. It's hard to reconcile. It is. It's hard to reconcile, like, wanting to include this person in your own morals and ethics, but then having them just great on everything that is your morals and ethics. Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, I think we all can agree, like, pretty conclusively that, like, we shouldn't feel this way in a lot of ways. Like,
yeah,
like we should be, if we espouse this, we weren't included, so we want to include, then we're going to have to do that. And it's very, very hard when people are dumb. And people are dumb. People are very dumb. And yeah, it's the worst. It's very hard. I'm coming to terms with it as well in various aspects.
Absolutely. It's something I learned. Sorry, as I chew this French fry. it's something I learned coming to college.
Choose my French fry.
something I learned coming to college is that, like, you, the friends you make in high school, essentially, it's not necessarily a have-to thing, but, like, in order to stay sane, just in this weird environment, you know, everything around you is changing, and, like, you essentially are forced to make friends with the people around you. Not necessarily people you have a lot in common with, but more, these people are close to me because we do these things together, so therefore we're friends. And so one of the things I realized when I came to college is that, like, you can make friends with people that have things in common with you, that share beliefs as you, but, like, also, in high school, you grow a lot, but in college, I genuinely believe that the friends that you make because of your common interests change your beliefs more than anything. I was reasonably, I thought of myself as open in high school, and then I came to college and started meeting so many significant people, just incredible people, with opinions on things that I just never even thought could be plausible or pertinent to my life in any way whatsoever, and it's absolutely opened me up to ideas like we're kind of talking about, where like believing that people are wrong because they like something I do, but like not in the same way. Like, that is completely almost ignorant in my, or at least that's a way I see it. For me, like me personally, it's a bad thing for me to feel. And it's definitely different. Like I said, coming to college and seeing that is incredible, but also very scary. Very scary.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, I mean, that was very well summed up. I don't even have a thought to that.
I mean, just,
that was
great.
Well, then we'll let Helen go, firstly, because it's been a very long, non-linear interview. So I guess we'll just ask the final question. What's Beta Fish up to now?
Right now, Beta Fish, well, we have a couple of new bloggers because, you know, we just started a new school year, so we have a couple of new people who are interested. So right now I'm kind of in a discussion with them about, you know, what do you want to write about, what makes a good blog, you know, what do people want to read, how to kind of approach it, because it's a very different kind of writing than a lot of other writing that people do. It's a little more conversational, a lot more opinionated usually. So we're trying to grow there. We want to make ourselves a little bit more visible on campus. We hope to do something like, you know, a B movie night or something that, you know, we can just advertise to people, you know, people would want to do, is a small commitment. And so they can come, they can do something they enjoy, and then we can also let them know that we exist, you know, that we're happening. So kind of, you know, growing in those senses, and then, you know, just still trying to establish a really, really good foundation of quality content, kind of like through all of our, you know, all of our sections, not just through blogging and everything. So that's pretty much what we're working on right now. But
absolutely. Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
This was great.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
this is a blast. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, you can. It's 12:30, and you can go. Congratulations.
Great,
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, so we've had some technical difficulties. This may be a lost episode. I'm very close to tears. Too close to tears, some might argue. And so we will proceed with an end as if this podcast is actually ending, so that I don't cry. How's that sound to everybody?
Mm-hmm. I kind of like it. I mean, you have emotions. I'm pretty sure you're a cyborg.
Yeah,
we've been
talking about this. Hannah and I have been talking about this about leveling how I feel like I've leveled myself out to not feel emotions, because I feel like that's like a correct way to do things. It actually kind of fits in with the nerd stuff too, because just like I think I did it socially, and like just a couple of experiences when I was younger is like, you want to be successful, you do it socially. You want to be socially successful, you be as blank as possible. And so I've been trying to like cry. I've been trying to do it.
Have you yet?
No, haven't really. This may do it. This right here may do it, but I don't know. I still probably will just do it in my room. Like I probably
won't. No. Shower. Shower cry is best cry.
Shower cry.
Yes.
I want to be able to cry around people. I want that to be a thing. My dad was always someone who never let us see him cry. And I don't think that like affected me negatively or anything. It was just like a thing that I learned that you do. Like, I don't know, that makes it sound as if it was negative. Maybe it was. I don't know. I do know that he's private. I do know that I don't want to be like that. I do know that I have a hard time not being like that.
I just cry so much that you get used to it. Like, you get used to crying around people.
I don't cry so much. Not so much because I don't want to. I just, like, it's. I don't see it as a negative thing at all. I think it's excellent to just, I think everybody needs to just let out some emotions. I somewhat agree with Taylor. It's just like, I've never wanted to cry in person. I never grew up with anybody that cried in front of people. But I also don't see a problem with it. Like, especially when you're among great, close friends who care a lot about somebody, it's just like,
Yeah. I mean,
it
I don't see
so
anything
good
wrong with it either. Yeah. I just don't do it. I'm sure it will. I'm sure it's like Hannah has a problem with throwing up. She can't do it. But there are times when you're supposed to do it because it's time to do it. It's
poison.
Poison.
Poison's a great instance to throw up.
it's time to purge. And, that's definitely the way to purge emotions. And I just sort of keep it as a bottle of shame.
Well, we're working through it.
Let it be known that poison is not the emotional thing. I forgot what I was going to say.
Talking about poison as like reasons to throw up. Very literal. Yeah. I like it. Well, I was talking about throwing up, so that was
I know what I said. The emotional purging. I was going to say poison is not an emotional purge. Do not use that as emotional purging.
Oh, okay.
He's crying.
Yeah,
emotional
tell that
purging.
To Socrates. Okay, right. Asshole. Socrates knows a lot.
How should we end it?
I don't know. Let's wrap it up somehow. Can we wrap it up with me crying because I think we lost the rest of the podcast? Can I just cry, cry us out?
Please?
I don't know if I can. I think I'm talking to myself so I don't cry, and I'm very close.
It's fine.
I cried at work one time. It was awful.
You what?
I cried at work.
Yep, I've cried at work. I've cried at work.
If somebody yells at me,
yep,
and it's for something that's out of my control,
yeah,
I just feel helpless.
Yeah.
And then, like, I had tears in my eyes. I had this manager. Merrick Smavis.
Yeah.
I don't want to use his real name.
Right.
It's Eric Davis. He's an asshole. And he tortured everybody. All the busboys quit because of him. And, like, there was this one time that I was just swamped, and he, like, called me out, yelled at me in front of everybody in the restaurant, and I just got so mad, and I went to the back, and, like, I threw all the dishes down, and I was just like, and I just didn't talk to anybody. And, like, I think one single, like,
single tear,
right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Anti, don't throw stuff out the window.
Yeah.
You know, the commercial where the Indian. I just had like one strong tear.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. See, I worked at an animal shelter, so there was a lot of emotional crying there. There was one time I just had to go in the bathroom and just cry it out. Yeah. It was. Can I tell the story?
Yeah. Of course.
So.
Just like the last few minutes of this is just and
then like that's I hope we get there. Yeah. At least we'll have something to put out.
So I worked at this animal shelter, and one of my jobs was to be I received phone calls. I worked in the receiving department where we took animals in that people couldn't keep anymore for various reasons. One day I answered the phone. Welcome, or this is I don't know if I can talk about that. Can we edit out the fact that I...
Yeah, we can.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll just put a big bleep over it.
So, but I'm working at this animal shelter, and I get this phone call. This woman is crying. I can barely understand what she's saying. And I said, ma'am, could you please speak up a little more? And she says, yes, I'm calling in about my German Shepherd. Had him for 17 years, and we found out recently he has cancer. And we can't afford the medication, and we need to put him to sleep. And I said, okay, have you called the vet's office? She said, this is when she really started to cry to the point where I could not understand her any longer. She started talking about, she was like, we can't afford to have him put down at a vet's office, and he's in a lot of pain, and I just wanted to know if there's anything you could do. And at this point, I started to cry, and I said, well, ma'am, our fee is blah, 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 to put an animal down, and she started crying louder and said, I can't afford that either. And I started crying over the phone. And all I could say was, ma'am, I'm sorry. There's nothing we can do. And it was just a bad occasion. I mean, essentially, I had to tell a person, sorry, you need this, but I can't offer it to you. and so she hung up the phone. And so I had to run out and, you know, go to the bathroom and really just let that out. And then some of my best friends brought me lunch that day because I texted them I was upset. So that was a great thing. But yeah, it's significant emotional stress.
What happens on the rest of the podcast is us looking around at one another sadly and a version of Amazing Grace that has no place in society. Luckily, most of Diner Night Episode 2 was captured. All of our wonderful conversation with Helen Cothrell and two bonus excellent stories from Matt Albany and Evan Swingle, both of which were very touching, and both of which did not get the happy ending that this podcast got. It was an excellent conversation, excellent week. I'm very happy to be able to release it. For guest host Evan Swingle, guest Helen Cothrell, and my co-hosts Matt Albany and Hannah Tacoris, I'm Taylor Reinhart. Thanks for listening to this episode of Diner Night.